Good afternoon, and welcome to the Henry Grain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM every week, Saturday at 12:05. And in store for you this week, focus on Florida for a change. As far as I know, very little Trump talk this Saturday because we are focusing on Florida. And coming up in just a moment will be Trimble Gomes. He is the award-winning journalist and the host of the Rotunda podcast that will bring us up to date on comings and goings and doings in Tallahassee. Well, some of those include State Senator Frank R. Tillies resigns in shame after a racial slur, and our own Manatee homeboy developer Carlos Baruff, with courtesy of the Rotunda podcast, will tell us a little bit about what's going on with the Constitutional Committee that he chairs. Also, what's up with House Speaker, Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran, and this new bromance with Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. Also, the House and Senate are united on a ride-sharing bill. What will Governor Scott do? Well, before we get into all of that, let's remind you that you can follow the Henry Rain Show at Facebook, at Henry Rain Show, or facebook.com/Henry Rain Show. If you prefer that way, you can get the podcast on demand at henryrainshow.podomatic.com. Follow us on Twitter at Henry Rain Show, and you can send your emails to henryrainshow@gmail.com. I want to let those of you know that we're looking for last week's show up on the podcast site. That will be up later this weekend. Had some delays in getting that up and finishing it up for on-demand use. And we will have today's show up this weekend also. And, again, very much looking forward to in just a few minutes when we speak with Trimble Gomes of the Rotunda podcast. I want to remind people that Alan Cross will rejoin me in the studio next week. And the way news goes these days, well, who really knows what the news and what the topics will be next week. But we will have that and more coming up. Also, if we get time, I'm not sure if we will or not, we have a pretty full plate coming up in just a few minutes with Trimble. There is speculation in Israeli media that the recent failed launch of the North Korean missile, and you may remember that there's been a number of these failures right at launch, right at the time of launch, right before, right after, could be active U.S. sabotage. That's not the North Koreans saying it. That is Israeli news sources. Well, going back to the focus on Florida, we have Senator Frank R. Tillies found himself in hot water this week, and he wound up resigning after using a racial slur during a private after-hours conversation with Senators Perry Thurston and Audrey Gibson Monday night. The Miami Republican took to Florida to issue a three-minute formal apology at the direction of Senate President Joe Negron, who stripped him of the committee chairmanship. Several groups called on Artiles to resign, including the chairman of the Legislative Black Caucus, Senator Perry Thurston himself. He filed a complaint to remove Artiles from the Senate. Of course, that's now a moot point. But Rules Chair Elizabeth Benacquisto found the complaint had merit and appointed Don Roberts, the chamber's top lawyer, to investigate. What she found, we'll never know, since it's a work product and not public now that the state senator has resigned. But we will take all that up in just a few moments with Trimble Gomes of the Rotunda podcast. Right now I have a report lined up from the WSVN Channel 7 Miami, from where Senator Artiles is from, and they'll bring us up to date, at least as of yesterday.
Senator's big decision following his racist remarks.
It was just beyond what could be acceptable.
A day after a call for change.
Today really is a win for everybody in Florida.
He's calling it quits.
Hello again, everyone. In the wake of mounting pressure to step down, he is out.
Just 2 days after apologizing to fellow lawmakers in Tallahassee, Frank Artiles has given up his seat in the legislature. And the nation's Walter Morris is live in Southwest Miami-Dade, where some voters are welcoming that decision. Walter?
Well, Greg, that state senator made a public apology earlier this week, but that wasn't enough for some voters here in his district. They were calling on him to resign, and today they got their wish.
I apologize. I am so sorry.
Just days after this public apology on the state Senate floor, Frank Artiles resigns amid mounting pressure to give up his seat from both sides of the aisle.
I think he made the right decision.
Friday, Senate President Joe Negron accepting Artiles' resignation letter. In it, he writes, "To the people of my district and all of Miami-Dade, I'm sorry I've let you down, and I ask for your forgiveness. I'm responsible, and I'm accountable, and effective immediately, I'm resigning from the Florida State Senate."
All of us are accountable for our actions and comments, so I think it's an appropriate resolution.
Artiles, a former Marine and now former state senator, came under fire for comments he made during an ugly exchange at a private club in Tallahassee Monday night, prompting the Legislative Black Caucus to file a formal complaint.
It was just beyond what could be acceptable.
Fellow Senator Perry Thurston says he was there when Artiles used racial slurs in a verbal attack directed at Senator Audrey Gibson. Following Artiles' resignation, Gibson released a statement saying in part, "This has been an ordeal no one should have to endure. I wish him well in all of his endeavors."
Without a doubt, the appropriate resolution.
That sentiment echoed across the Capitol. A spokeswoman for the Florida Democratic Party calling it a victory for the people.
He needed to resign, and today really is a win for everybody in Florida.
Despite Artiles' efforts to smooth things over, it wasn't enough for some voters in his district. Thursday morning, protesters gathering in front of his office in Southwest Miami-Dade. Religious leaders and members of the community calling on Artiles to step down.
He said that he was not going to resign and not step aside.
And Friday, the clergy coming together once again, this time at the Second Baptist Church, calling the resignation an answer to their prayers.
We are thankful and grateful for this wonderful outcome.
Equality Florida and the NAACP are also applauding Artiles' decision to step down. Live in Southwest Miami-Dade, Walter Moore, 7 News, 19.
Again, courtesy of WSVN Channel 7 there at Miami. And joining us now is Trimble Gomes. He is an award-winning journalist and former statewide news director of Florida Public Radio. He had hosted its flagship program, Capitol Report, and created the public affairs program, It's About Florida. He is a political commentator and regular political contributor to WTXL, ABC 27 in Tallahassee. In fact, his podcast, The Rotunda Podcast, is featured every Monday on the online website for the Tallahassee Democrat. And we welcome Trimble Gomes to the Henry Rain Show. Trimble, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Henry. Yes, and it's Trimmel Gomes, and people usually like Trimmel, but it's Trimmel.
I apologize.
No need. It's very common.
And hopefully I'll get a lot of other chances to practice with that, as I hope you'll return in the future, because I have to tell the audience, the Rotunda Podcast is just a great way of getting news about Florida, not only just news, but the features, the third feature in this past week's podcast about the murder of a Florida legislator back in the 50s by his, some might say, African-American mistress, other might say African-American victim, created quite a scandal in the day, but it's also got plenty of hard news, and we're going to probably sample a little bit of that in just a moment with your piece about Carlos Baruff, a Manatee County resident and currently chairing the Constitutional Revision Committee. But, Trimble, tell us a little bit how you came to launch the Rotunda Podcast and a little bit about your background at Florida Public Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me on again. Well, my background, Florida Public Radio, that my home, my beginning. I've always been a fan of public radio. I got my start in public radio in Fort Pierce, Florida, not too far away from you guys compared to where I am now in Tallahassee. But I was a volunteer radio. I came in to read the newspapers on the weekend, reading for the blind service that they had. I would just come in on my weekends and just read newspapers and stuff like that, volunteering at the station. And from there, I was like, you know, where can I go on and do this even more? And I went to the University of Florida, and after studying broadcasting and journalism there, I came to Tallahassee, worked for WFSU Florida Public Radio, moved my way up the ladder from a temporary reporter covering the legislature ending up running the entire department, being news director and providing content for the entire state. So that's how I got into it before I jumped off and took a brief career break and went into PR, public relations, where I had my company, Gomes Media Strategies. And when I made that transition, I just loved broadcasting so much that I decided to, like, you know, let me go into podcasting. Let me start a podcast. It's easy. It comes easy for me, just putting content together. I walk around the Capitol, and here in Tallahassee, people still see me as a journalist, so I'm able to get interviews and all that stuff. So it just came natural to just put it all together in this podcast, and that's how the Rotunda became the Rotunda. So, yeah, that's a good rundown of how I'm able to do this program, which I so dearly enjoy.
And currently there's over 100 episodes available at rotundapodcast.com and many other ways, podcast venues that you can get that from. But I would suggest going just straight to rotundapodcast.com, get all the background material that's available there also. And again, I urge the audience to listen, because certainly that, when the name or the phrase podcast conjures up a lot of ideas with many people, but certainly this podcast could be on any network, broadcast, radio network. So
yeah, it pretty much mirrors the show that I used to host for Florida Public Radio, which was a statewide program, Capitol Report. It would be a segment of, like, you know, stories and stuff coming from the Capitol, or interviews with the governor or legislative leaders, the House, the Senate, and interviews with newsmakers. So the program is about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. And what I try to do is not the typical sound bites. It's sitting down with these newsmakers and really getting to know why they did what they did, why they voted a certain way, why they represent a particular issue. And I interview them at bars, at coffee shops, and just get in a relaxed feel. And like you said, podcast conjures up different ideas. And this is a nicely well-produced program, and I really pay attention to the production and music to really make sure the listener get a really nice experience and really hear. It's not just me sitting behind a microphone giving my opinion. I allow these people, all sides, it's nonpartisan, everyone's welcome, and I am the vehicle for them to get their ideas, their views out to the public, and I just ask the questions. So the listener gets to understand where they stand, and everyone gets to play and their ideas. But the Rotunda is a meeting ground for everyone to meet, gather, and have a good conversation and inform the public.
We're speaking with Trimal Gomes from the Rotunda podcast, excuse me. And Trimal, what was the biggest surprise or the biggest adjustment you had to make in going from a regular broadcast venue into podcasting?
Well, it's an adjustment that I didn't make, actually. I did not really adjust much from what I used to do for NPR and Florida Public Radio. I keep it the same way because it's what I know. Like, when you listen to the program, I'm not injecting my opinion and all of that stuff. I provide analysis, factual analysis. Like, this is where the issues are. This is what the historical context of the issues are. I don't chime in and weigh in and weigh it down with my particular view. So I haven't changed much. So it just keeps it standard. I try to infuse some humor and fun, but I'm not funny. I know that. So the jokes I try to crack, I just keep it away from there. I really rely more on the people I bring on the program, the interview, the guests. It's about hearing them and what they have to say. These leaders, that influential people that run the state, that's what it's all about. Giving an opportunity for the everyday folks to hear from them beyond the 10-second sound bite and say, like, you know, who is this person? What makes them tick? And why are they voting a certain way? Why are they pushing a certain issue? And providing the background so we really understand how the process works in Tallahassee. And that's really what it's all about. Like, you know, you think you're coming up here and they're voting and you get to weigh in and stuff like that, but what's driving them? Like, you know, who's paying them? How are they being motivated?
Jamel, as far as getting into what makes someone tick, now here on the west coast of Florida, we aren't that familiar with State Senator Frank Artiles, former State Senator Frank Artiles. Tell us a little bit about him as background before we talk about the actual controversy that he stepped into this week.
Well, Frank Artiles, former Senator Frank Artiles, he has always been a polarizing figure. Every time I've covered Senator Frank Artiles, formerly Representative Artiles, it's been through a controversial issue. He is a former Marine. His stature, he's very big, he's tall, and he's a commanding figure. And some would say he used his image to his advantage in social settings and his professional settings. Like, you know, he stands over you, and he's very aggressive. So with that, his reputation, like he carries his figure in his encounters. Even like if you bump into him at a bar, you know, this is the person you don't want to bump into. It could lead to a bar fight, and that has happened on a couple of occasions where it has been noted for some of the bars here in Tallahassee, and he's gotten into scuffles with patrons at the bar. So that's his reputation. He's known for being a very aggressive and personality over the top. So that is the man that outside of the Capitol presence, that's how he is socially. People know him as very brash, drunken sailor mouth. he's not one to hold back. He curses and stuff like that. So that's who he is naturally.
So he was in this conversation with fellow state senators Perry Thurston and Audrey Gibson, who I believe are African-American colleagues, correct?
Yes.
And so he used this conversation to voice an opinion about a vote, and he talked about the individuals that voted using the N-word, or I think everybody knows what we're talking about here. So what was the context, though, of that vote that he was opining about?
So he was basically discussing, he had issues with how Senate President Negron became Senate President, and how he, like, you know, Senate President Negron came to power. And he used the racial slur, the N-word, to describe not particularly Senator Audrey Gibson and Senator Perry Thurston. It wasn't really directed at them. It was directed at the people who supported Negron's rise. And so he basically called them, all these people are a bunch of N-words.
Now, are they actually African-American, or he just chose to call them that?
He chose to call these other people he was describing the N-word. And if you recall his apology, he was like, you know, he used that to defend, well, this is how we talk in the Hialeah.
So let me just clarify for the audience for a moment here. So he's talking about a group of individuals that voted for Senator Negron, but they weren't African-American, but he used the racial slur to describe them that way. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let me just get inside the psychology of that a little bit. you're talking to two African-American colleagues. You're talking about individuals that aren't African-American, and you decide to use that slur. Do you have any insight as to why, what he was trying to make them think or feel about that?
Well, there is no insight to have other than the overall explanation is that he was under the influence of alcohol. So that would be the driving force to, like, you know, for that conversation to get so heated, because it wasn't just a racial slur. He was calling the B word and the P word, the female anatomy, and referring to Senator Audrey Gibson as a girl. So it was just a slew of profanity, and of course the big one of them all was the racial slur when you're talking to African Americans. And just the conversation, it was just, it's not one that you would have in polite company or any company to that level. But the only rationale and thing is that, you know, he was under the influence. But then,
I think you would say
truth comes out. This is not something, it's not unlike him to speak this way.
Well, maybe I'm putting more into it than is really there, or maybe I'm giving Senator Tillis more time than he deserves. But I think it also speaks to some of the other things in the news. When we talk about how Bill O'Reilly in his alleged sexual harassment case referred to people and all, it seems to me that when you use that term in front of those individuals, even if you're not calling these African-American colleagues that name, you're using it for people actually that who knows why you would call them that, it seems like more of a dominance and power move. It's something that I can do this, and I know it's offensive to you, and you have no recourse. You can't do anything. Much like Bill O'Reilly's attitude or some of these other individuals that have alleged to do these things to their victims.
Yeah. And it puts the African-American, the black person, in an uncomfortable situation. Me being black myself, I'm black. I'm from Georgetown, Guyana, in South America. And if I'm hearing that conversation, I'm like, you know, what do I say? How do I react? And like, you, even though you're talking about other people, you are using a very inflammatory language that will, like, you know, it's not appropriate. You shouldn't call someone those things. And as you mentioned, like, you know, it's a power play. It's discrediting them. It's putting them on a different level, all of that stuff. So who knows what's in the mindset. As I said earlier, it's not unlike him. And the conviction in which he said these things, it's not the first time. It wasn't a one-off mistake. It was a part of his vernacular. And he didn't have the censorship to know, like, to distinguish, well, I'm in a different setting. I'm a leader. Like, I'm a professional. I'm the one that sets the example for the people. I shouldn't be carrying myself in this way or using these terms. But it, that was not the case.
And just to wrap this up, I do note, and I don't have the details in front of me, but it was a news report, I believe, that just surfaced yesterday, that Senator Achilles hired in his campaign two consultants, which unusual talents. One was a Hooters calendar girl, and the other was a Playboy model. Is that correct?
Yes. Both, like, essentially were bartenders, young, very good-looking, attractive young ladies, and they, like, you know, they met and they were hired on as consultants. To consult in what capacity, to do what kind of work, that is unknown. But these people in the report, you know, traveled to different places with the senator and participated in fundraising events, and they were paid tons of money. You would wonder, like, what were their experience? Like, what kind of consulting was offered? But it goes to the process, and this is what I try to do with the podcast, describe how things work. And this is how it sometimes happens in Tallahassee. These yellow, very attractive individuals fall in with these older and powerful folks that come to Tallahassee for a short period of time, and stuff happens. Like, you know, they fall into relationships or this or that. They get jobs and this, and like it makes me fall into like speculating what it is.
We don't have to speculate. You don't have to. I can do that freely. I'm sure that these two ladies were probably very adept at social media and brought their skills there to that that field. And then finally, what is in store for the people of his home Senate district? Is there going to be a special election? Does the Governor Scott appoint? What happens next?
Special election, and this is where it all goes into play. And this was the consternation that we saw here in Tallahassee as to whether he should resign. And I, like, you know, immediately, I was like, you know, this, he should resign. And why fight this, what is the inevitable, and force us to go through what will actually happen? And people criticize the Senate president for not being forceful in saying, like, you know, you should step down right now. But in this situation, it's good to be careful and let the process go through. And what the Democrats did and the Black Caucus did, they went through the procedure. They filed and made their complaint official. They sent a letter. Senate President Joe Negron appointed, like, you know, started a special committee to look into it and investigate. And all the while the drumbeat of resignation was growing, and Artiles himself, being who he is, his personality, fought back, which was unusual. Like, you just issued an apology, and then you threatened to sue these individuals that you've just wronged. So it was just not good, and the writings were on the wall, and this was not Artiles' first mistake. It was a pattern, and he has been saved many times before, and he's been caught in so many different controversies that it was just like, you know, time for him to step back, and he succumbed to the pressures.
Well, moving on, let's continue with something actually from Tramiel's podcast. Again, we're speaking with Tramiel Gomes and his podcast, The Rotunda. You can find out more at therotundapodcast.com, or rather, excuse me, rotundapodcast.com. And this is portions of an interview that were conducted. I'm not quite sure. Where did you catch up with Carlos Baru?
They held after some criticism for the Constitutional Revision Commission and not having enough, like, you know, public hearings for the public to chime in the process. They expanded the public hearing and opened one in Tallahassee. So I met up with the chairman of the Constitutional Revision Commission, Carlos Baru, in Tallahassee, one of their additional sites for public hearings. And it was held at the FAMU campus, so I just attended the meeting, and I was hoping to get a one-on-one interview, but they said his schedule was so tight, so I just showed up at the meeting and got him during a brief gaggle, and that's why my time with him was just so short. Next time I will try and, like, you know, do an entire show out of the Constitutional Revision Commission, so that's how I met up with him.
And for our audience, the Constitutional Revision Commission meets every 20 years for what purpose, other than a revision?
Well, the purpose of the Constitutional Revision Commission is to revise Florida's Constitution. It's a time every 20 years. A select group of Floridians can simply, bypass the legislature,
right, so
and
would
propose whatever laws they like based from input from the community.
So is this to...
Yeah.
Tramiel, excuse me. So is this just to generate constitutional amendments as opposed to a comprehensive rewrite?
Yes.
Okay. So let's join the Rotunda podcast here with Carlos Roof and Tramiel Gomes.
Once every 20 years, the people of Florida gets an opportunity to rewrite its constitution. The process is done through the Constitution Revision Commission, and I caught up with the CRC chair, Carlos Ferruth, during a public hearing in Tallahassee.
Carlos, please call me Carlos.
So Carlos, so overall in general, what's the process been like for you?
I love it. I love crowds. I love when people come up that are not, you just want to speak from the heart, because at the end of the day, that's who I'm trying to get to.
What can you say to the people who are listening at home to get involved in this process? What is
they should
process?
Get involved. I mean, the only state in the country where one individual can come and speak.
Now, first of all, Tremell, we've had a number of public hearings in Manatee County about Longbar development, the Intercoastal Waterway here, major developments. It's changed its name a little bit now, and it's been revised, and there's been a new revision. And I have never, I think many people here would be surprised to hear the populist Carlos Ferruth looking forward to all this citizen input. Is this something that, you can't read his mind, obviously. Is this something that you've seen him express before, other than in this one particular situation?
Well, it's part of his job now. He has to express this populist outlook, despite his past and what he has said in before. This is part of the job. If he is not, can you imagine the criticism that will come forth? The makeup of the CRC is all about giving the citizen an input to have a say in Florida's laws. And then on the flip side, you have to go into, like, you know, who really has the influence here? Like, who really has Carlos Ferruth's ear? And to his argument and what he's trying to downplay and say is, like, you know, it's open to the citizen to be part. So it's part of his job to actually have this populist outlook. Otherwise, he would not be fulfilling it. And it is an appointed position, so this is the reason why you're probably, like, perplexed and to see, like, you know, why is this coming from this? It's because of his connections to the governor, Rick Scott, to have this role. So being perplexed as to him taking this this populist view is maybe surprising to you, but, like, you know, it's part of his job, and it's something that he has to do.
Well, let me just remind the audience that may be listening and haven't really followed the career of Carlos Ferruth. And here in Manatee County, he is, of course, I guess his designation would be CEO of Medallion Homes, a major developer in this area and region. But as far as appointments, he's been on the Southwest Florida Water Management Board. He's been on the Airport Authority. He's been on the State College of Florida Board, where he led a effort to become the first community college to eliminate tenure for their professors. So we have that outstanding here in our area. We get to lead the way and be the one and only college without tenure. They also led in that same position for non-teaching employees the concept that they have to bid for their employment. In other words, how cheaply will you work is part of your interview process, or at least your application process. He, of course, recently ran for U.S. Senator against Marco Rubio in the primary and was defeated, as we know. How is Carlos Ferruth perceived in your part of the state?
Well, I think the perception is more down south, where you guys know him more on a statewide level, was when he tried to run for statewide office against, like, you know, Marco Rubio, and didn't make it. But as you described, like, you know, he's very influential. He's a big developer, and he has a lot of connections. So that's what I talk about on the podcast, like, you know, that's all what it comes down to: your connection, your influence, and to make things happen. So some might say he is not qualified to be on one of the most important boards and position that the state has, the once every 20-year process. But he knows the right people, and he's on it, and hopefully the process will influence him to change the way you all have known him to be. And hopefully, like, you know, yeah, he may have been one way, but maybe being in this position, it would force him to be more open and, like, hey, this is about listening to the people, those who come to these public hearings, to say the state ought to look into this and make a law about this. So hopefully it goes the other way and it changes him if he is stuck in his ways.
Well, in just a moment, we'll play another short excerpt from the Rotunda podcast, Trammell's podcast, that you can find at rotundapodcast.com. And you can find the whole interview there, and as well as the other features from the most recent episode. But as far as the Constitutional Revision Committee, weren't there some controversial rule changes or organizational changes that were made when he became the chairman of it?
I think one of those, and I should have dug into this some more, was, like, you know, the process they claimed wasn't as transparent. They, like, people wanted to know, like, when things were going to happen. When will the commissioners provide their input? They just really wanted to know more of an outline of the process so we all can see how it's going to be run. And that structure was not there. So people have raised concerns, and that is what has led to at least seeing the additional public hearing. So that's how it is. Like, you know, if you don't like something, raise hell and get things to open up and shape. And it's not a perfect model even now, but those people who have raised concern have made it, like, a little bit better.
Well, let's hear from the Rotunda podcast as far as what Carlos Baru says have been the major topics here as he spoke to Trammell. Oh, come on. Oh, there we go.
And that idea could get wings, and it could end up changing the future quarter. That's pretty big stuff. And it cost them nothing.
So, except a couple of hours of their time.
For those concerned about lobbying and stuff like that and getting your attention.
It cuts through all of that. That's the beauty of this process. It cuts through everything. A person who just has an idea or a motivation, brings it forward, and they can make a difference. That's the Floridians we're looking for.
Members of the Capitol Press Corps chimed in and asked questions of Baruch, like, what are some of the top issues being brought up by the people?
In general, though, if you could characterize what you think the most, the things that you've heard the most from
the stuff so far.
On the stuff so far, not tonight, right? In general.
I think Article 1, Section 23 has been a common thing. This thing where we don't have the authority to do what we're doing has come up considerable. I think the redistricting and the open primaries come up. So those are common themes I think we've heard throughout the state.
Felons voting and the environment too, are those things?
We've heard that, but not as much as the ones I mentioned earlier.
All right, great.
How about home
rule? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, home rule comes up.
Okay, so first off, what is the provision of the Constitution that he was referring to there?
I was sitting here trying to pull it up. I actually need to get into that and see particularly what it is. Honestly, yeah, no, I hadn't gotten into.
Well, we can table that for just a moment. So he did talk about open primaries there, which I think was a fascinating topic for him to bring up. Is there any traction that people would want open primaries? For people that aren't listening, for the people that are listening, the open primaries would allow people not registered in that individual party to come in and vote in a primary they were interested in. Right now we have closed primaries where only Republicans can vote in Republican primaries, Democrats in Democratic primaries. And here locally, Trammell, maybe it happens up there in Tallahassee too, there's been a strategy at the county commission level and some of the other countywide or even single-member district areas here in Manatee County and Sarasota County, and I assume other places. So if there is a, and I'd like to make this very, very clear to the audience, say we have a single-member district or countywide district, and we have a Republican running against a Republican, and there's no Democratic candidate. Well, in that case, the primary then becomes the general election, and independents and Democrats and whatever party affiliations all vote in that same election, and they have a say on who their representative will be. But there is a caveat to that in that if someone registers as a write-in candidate for the opposite party, and that name will never appear on a ballot. It'll just be a blank line with no indication of any clue for the voters that come to the general election that there's a choice. Then that closes off the Republican primary or the Democratic primary, if that's the case, and then you will have the leader of that district, the representative of that district, selected by basically one-third of the eligible voters. And this has become just a frequent occurrence here in Manatee County, especially when one case where developers have a favorite, and if the general population were voting, they would probably go against what the developers wishes. So over the last 10 years, this has happened more and more frequently here in Manatee County, Sarasota County, beyond. I don't know if you've seen it happen up in your part of the state. Is there any traction to actually have open primaries as the standard way of doing things?
It has been talked about over and over again. I've seen editorials pushing for it. Personally, as a voter, like, you know, I would love for it to be there because, like, you know, for me, and I'm not a party person. Independent, registered independent, and one party does not have the answer to everything. So, like, you know, I may agree with you with this, but I may not agree with you with that. And we're seeing that rise of, like, you know, especially with millennials and stuff, people want to be able to choose what they believe in. And we're seeing it more so now that things are flawed. But to your point, yes, there is some mumblings, and the momentum is slowly, slowly itching up for open primaries. But as far as something that's really substantive to really push things over the edge, I don't see that happening yet. But those issues that you raised that's happening down there in Manatee County, if people are upset when they're locked out and they're not able to vote the way they want to vote, when they head to the ballot box and they're like, geez, I've been investing in this person that I really like, and look, I'm closed off. I can't even vote for you because I'm not in that party and I have to wait. So that frustration is there. It's just figuring out getting that. This is something that they could address. But will the people on the panel put that on the as an amendment, put it forth? This is where the CRC comes in. Hopefully there's enough people to raise that issue at those public hearings to say, please address this now.
And we don't have the time to get into it right now, but there's also the point about an open primary that it would cause both parties to become more mainstream and less dominated by their fringes. But, again, that's a topic for another time. I want to move on because we are sort of coming up on the close, and we still have a couple topics, if we can, to reach. I think most of our audience will have heard this commercial before.
Tallahassee politicians want to stop marketing Florida and competing for jobs.
The politicians in Tallahassee don't get it. They don't understand how jobs are created. If the politicians in Tallahassee say they don't want to market our state and we lose tourists, then we're going to lose jobs. If we lost 2% of the jobs in tourism, that's 28,000 jobs. The politicians are wrong. There is not a job that's expendable. Every job's important. Florida will compete.
Sponsored by Let's Get to Work.
All right, that's from Governor Scott's committee. Let's Get to Work. And let's hear Governor Scott as he addressed the issue of Visit Florida just this week.
So we've got to continue to market. And so my goal this session, since we know we have more money, we have the money in the budget, is to spend another $24 million. We already had my budget, $76 million, to spend another $24 million to take us to $100 million of spend so we get more tourists here, so we get more jobs for Florida families.
All right. Well, that was Governor Scott just this week. And there has been an ongoing controversy about Visit Florida with House Speaker Richard Corcoran, Governor Scott wanting to increase the budget or at least bring it to $100 million. Richard Corcoran has moved off his position of eliminating it completely to he is open to $25 million for this year. And then somehow U.S. Senator Bill Nelson is a player in this drama also. For those that aren't aware, it's almost certain that House Speaker Richard Corcoran intends to run for governor in the 2018 election, Governor Scott, to challenge Senator Bill Nelson for the U.S. Senator post. But what is the by the way, I do want to point out to the audience also that this week Richard Corcoran says that he loves Governor Rick Scott, quote, to death. The irony of that particular phrase probably is not lost on many, but he's getting weary of, quote, slings and arrow he's taken from Governor Scott. Outside the two men's back and forth, how does that play out in the environment of the legislature in general?
It's causing a lot of, like, you know, it's politics when it comes down to it. And there are people, some who benefit, and some would argue the public is benefiting, especially regardless of the political motives, the public is seeing something that is unlike, you know, this Republican infighting is also exposing what Corcoran would call, like, you know, this corporate welfare mentality that he is uprooting, which is these incentives that are often offered to companies, and that has to deal with not just Visit Florida, but Enterprise Florida, the marketing arm that gets recruits companies to come here, and they offer like tax breaks and stuff like that. So it's reverberating, and as you mentioned, both of these individuals are looking for other opportunities in their future life in public office. Governor Scott, likely contender in the Senate race, that's why you're seeing him election himself to the president, President Donald Trump, and aligning himself, always going to Washington, photo ops next to each other, and which may come back and sting him. But for now, he has really found a liking to the president with the business background. Richard Corcoran, with all of his upheaval and the turmoil and raising and doing all of these things that are unlike what you would expect for a Republican to do, is giving him some time in the media and some earned media that could help him in his future ambitions of possibly running for governor. So that's how it's being reverberated outside. Inside the legislature, it's causing people to wonder, will we end on time? Will this derail the regular 60-day session? Will we have a special session with all these other issues that are going on when the governor can't get his priorities through? So it's all there, and it's the theater of the process.
Is it just that they're useful foils to each other to draw a contrast between themselves? Are they actually damaging each other's chances at the statewide race, or is this a real intellectual debate between the two?
It's a real debate, and to me, it's a debate that needs to be had, because, like, you know, once you're doing something the same way over and over, to Corcoran's credit, what is the return on the state's investment? You know, the governor has really latched on to the business mentality. Run it like a business. Support businesses. Business is almost as if the business model is the answer to everything that has to be done in the state. And Corcoran is saying, like, you know, let's take a break and look at that. When we invest in these businesses, what are the returns are we getting? He's not opposed to investing in businesses, but he wants to see the returns. What are the numbers? Like, when we give a corporate break, are we getting the jobs? And what he has found is that that's really not the case. They make these promises, and oftentimes it does not come back. So it's a
good discussion. It's a philosophical discussion, and people are applauding outside of the infighting. It's actually uncovering some things and letting people see, like, you know, we're not really getting what was promised and what's being offered. So it's leading to real reforms, and that's to Corcoran's credit and to the governor's dismay. And that's why you're seeing the fighting and them being it's causing quite a controversy.
Carmel, as we wrap up this up, many of the audience may be familiar with the controversy about the $1 million contract for the South Florida rapper Pitbull and the Sexy Beaches video. But I was struck that I was unfamiliar with it, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, when House Speaker Corcoran singled out the $12 million contract with Emeril Lagasse, the superstar chef and restaurateur. We've seen, well, you see him on the packaging in the grocery store, and you see him in the media. What did that $12 million go for?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I haven't had the time to dig into, but that's part of the process. And over time, there needs to be a true check and balance. And with that issue, I'll get into that and more, but even with the CRC, the Constitutional Revision Commission that we just talked about, it's a good process. Like, do we need to create more laws? We have these 60-day sessions that happen every year. I think we just need one good session to really go and maybe review the laws that we have on the books and tweak them, adjust them, and stop creating more because we already have them there. But, like, you know, these contracts that we farm out and they're getting more big and, like, you know, $12 million, how much? Do you really need to give out $1 million for two tweets when you can give someone else, like, you know, $5,000, and they can do a whole lot more innovative things to give more of a return on investment? So it's a good time to review policies and really check to see how business is really done and how we can, like, you know, do things differently instead of the norm.
Tramiel, and finally, as we're coming up on the clock here, how does Senator Bill Nelson play into this drama?
Senator Bill Nelson, he plans to run for re-election, and, like, you know, that would pit the governor, who is trying to run for Senate, against each other. So those two, when it's basically jockeying for as much earned media and free attention as possible. So the governor's war chest, like, you know, he became governor by utilizing his personal wealth and $76 million out of his own money to reach the office of the governor. So you can expect a lot of funds being thrown into this upcoming Senate race. So Bill Nelson, he's there. He has to fight to retain his seat, and he's seeing that he has a likely opponent in the governor. So that's just the whole campaigning playing out before us.
But he was invited by House Speaker Corcoran to address the House. Was there a precedent for that, or is this sort of an unusual thing for an opposing party speaker to invite the opposing party state U.S. senator to address the state House?
Yeah, if one hand you can say it's cordial, like, we're all in the same family, we're all fighting for Florida, and they all represent various parts of Florida. Senator Bill Nelson, despite his party as opposite to Speaker Corcoran, Republican, and Senator Bill Nelson, a Democrat, having the senior representative of the state in Washington visit the state house is not unprecedented, and it's not unusual. But I think, you know, it's timing and positioning. It's respected to give that. Like, you know, this is who you represent, Florida. So there's no reason why you don't have a presence in the House of Representatives here. But to promote him in such a way, to have him speak and all of that stuff, it is, could some say, a dig to
the governor, who is hoping to be the senator, and the infighting between the governor and Richard Corcoran is, as we just talked about, it's not a secret that they don't see eye to eye right now. So many speculated it's a direct jab to the governor.
We've been speaking with Tramell Gomes for almost an hour now, and I again want to thank him for the generosity of his time and urge you to check out the Rotunda Podcast at rotundapodcast.com. You can follow him on Twitter and other ways. That if you just go to the website, you'll find all the resources there, well over 100 episodes. Instead of binge-watching Netflix, you can binge-listen to Tramell. And, Tramell, what would you like to leave the audience with about your podcast? What's it coming up? Is it, does it post on Sunday or Monday?
It posts every Monday. It's a relaxed program. It's about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. You can support the program. I welcome donations. But, as you know, having your own show, it takes a lot of production. And I would like to make it my full-time job, but I also do other things. But I welcome those sponsors and donors who are interested in supporting this quality program. And it's usually just taking upon my expertise and knowing the process and sharing it with the public. And I personally enjoy it. It's personally enjoyed it. A really nice hobby. And I am so thankful that I get to play it and keep this aspect of this. It's something I enjoy doing. So.
And remember, on his podcast, he plays the objective reporter, but I think if we go back and replay this show, we might have gotten an opinion or two out of Tramell. And,
I try to keep it fair with opinion and analysis, and I do, we have expertise in our areas, and I've spent some time in the process, so with the facts. We didn't. I could say, like, this is how things have done. I can weigh in. And what I do is let people know when there is an opinion coming. So, yeah, it's nice and fair.
All right. Well, Tramell, thank you again. I hope we get to speak to you again in the not-too-distant future. But until then, the listeners can go and find the podcast and keep themselves busy until that moment comes again. Thank you again so much.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
Bye-bye. Well, thanks to Tramell. Went quite round the horn on those topics and far-reaching. And, again, I urge you to listen to his podcast at rotundapodcast.com. You can also just Google the Rotunda Podcast, and that will get you all kinds of resources there. Well, next week, Alan Cross returns to co-host the show, and who knows what in the world will be the news of the week, but it will be here on the Henry Rain Show.